Good morning. Thursday Talk Around begins now, February 5th edition. Got partly cloudy. We're at 30 degrees right now. Jana Gageland in. We're talking history with our favorite historian. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
And we're talking kind of front page news today.
Yes,
and you said there's a little crime in this. Kind of, can we call this potpourri again?
Pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty
front
close.
Page news.
Front page news. Whatever was on the front page in the newspaper, and sometimes that wasn't always the best stories, but it's a good place to start.
Absolutely.
And, you know, sometimes you go farther in and you get a good one, but I got a few from the front page, so I will tell you that in 1926, and I think it was January 28th, we had the low temperature of January, which was 21 below.
Oh,
yeah.
Ouch.
That would be kind of painful.
Not having that today, though.
No, we're not having that, thankfully.
Keep it positive.
Yeah. So do you remember the fire that was at the corner in Lieber's Shoe Store, and it was on the Christmas Eve, Christmas Day weekend, 1925?
I think we've talked about this
before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the follow-up to that. They had a sale, and it was a smoke and fire sale at the Lieber's Shoe Store, and they set records. Yeah, they had it on the Thursday. They started on the Thursday morning, and there were so many people there that they had the doors locked, and they were just outside waiting to get into this store to buy up some of their smoke and fire.
A fire sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So there were big throngs, and they opened the door, and they had a lot of people on staff, so the throng of people was really well handled. It was, you know, sometimes they had just way too many. So one time they had way too many, and they end up just locking the front door because people were coming in. And then they could leave by the rear door, and then they opened the front door again and let a few more people in. And so they got
so
that.
So obviously not everything was damaged in this fire. I mean, they were able to salvage something.
Yeah, some of the smoke stuff, I suppose, you know. And it was shoes, so how long does that retain? I'm not sure.
And didn't you say they put everything out in the street?
Yeah,
I mean, it was like everything was sitting out on Main Street here.
Yeah, they're trying to get something out of their shoe store.
Right.
Merchandise.
Right.
So I don't know if we talked a lot about George Manikowski. George Manikowski was west of here, kind of Morton area.
Popular name, yeah,
yes,
around
yes.
here.
Anyway, he invented the aerolite windmill. He was an instructor at the college for a while, and it was a windmill situation that would catch the breeze, and then it would charge batteries. And then those batteries then would be used to run some of the things on his farm. So he got to be pretty popular, and I'm going to sneeze here in a minute.
It's okay. Go ahead. I did that twice last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, that time of year. There you go. Okay,
right.
Now you got it out of the way.
I hope so.
All right.
Maybe not. Well, anyway, there was the Shah of Persia, which is the present-day Iran, and he sent for one of his windmills.
Really?
Yes, and this was not the very first time that it went to Asia, but it was the very first time it went to that part of Asia,
okay,
which is sort of desert.
Yeah.
You know? So they packed it up in 300-pound boxes. Couldn't be more than 300 pounds. And because when they got it there to be shipped, then it would be taken off the ship and then delivered by camel. And the camel could not carry more than 300 pounds of weight. So, yeah.
George Manikowski.
Yes.
Invented this.
Yes.
And then sent it over to Persia.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was married to a Purdon, Bell Purdon.
Okay.
You know, the Purdon family, you know, people.
Another popular name around
yes,
here. Yeah.
Very much. Okay. So there's a guy who stopped into the Bell Telephone Company, and he thought, you know, I'm going to call Denver. I got to really get a hold of somebody in Denver. 1926. So he's like, okay, it's probably going to take a while to get this to go through. He was figuring 15 minutes, half an hour before the phone call would actually get through to Denver. Well, it took 3 minutes. Yeah, 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
3 minutes, 1926. Yeah,
that's call. Miraculous for back
yeah,
then, yeah.
And they had no difficulty understanding one another. So it was very, very clear. You know how much he paid for the 10-minute phone call?
Do I even want to guess?
Well, $16.10.
No kidding.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. So that was kind of nice that he could, from here, from Wahpeton, call Denver.
In 3 minutes. And get connected in three minutes. Yeah.
And still have a good phone call. No interruptions or anything. So we have some cars that some of the thieves are going after.
Here comes the crime.
Well,
we talked about this
crimes.
Last
yeah.
week.
Yeah. One of the crimes was that people were stealing gas from the cars because the 1926 cars didn't have locking gas caps on them. And the tanks held about 10 gallons of gas, but they were quite easy to break into because some of them were under the front seat and some were up by the windshield. So they were very easy for the
Thieves to get at, yeah.
So between 6th Street and 9th Street, there was a crime spree of stealing gas. And they didn't take any of the tools with that are with the car or the tires or anything, just the gas.
Okay. Yeah.
And they drained them dry. Of course, you'd have to siphon it out, which to me,
That's something I'd want to do.
Yeah.
And what was gas back then, like 3 cents a gallon?
Yeah, it was really inexpensive. And so they had a warning that if you saw any suspicious-looking characters hanging around garages at night, you should be watching them and report their actions. So they were relying on the people in the city to help them out with catching these thieves.
The gas thieves of 26.
Yeah. This one, I went through it the first time, and I thought, I don't know, that doesn't sound very interesting. But I looked into it a little bit more. It says the headline is Chinese Tong ships bones of dead back to China in boxcar. So imagine working on the Great Northern in this one of the cars that you're transporting to Seattle. It had to go, across many states, but it was on its way to Seattle so that these boxes could be loaded onto a ship, which would then go to China. The freight that they were hauling was the bones of 412 Chinese.
From here?
From Chicago.
From Chicago, okay.
So they came from Chicago, got here, and then from here, then they went all the way to Seattle so they could be loaded. Now, the Tong is kind of like a mafia, sort of.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, why that number of bodies? But
yeah, well, that was, Chicago was kind of an area where immigrants went to, especially the Chinese, and then they would open businesses, and then to protect them, they had the Tong organization that would, make sure that the people didn't rob them. Like having a Chinatown. I think they had two of them, actually.
Was that before Al Capone? I would imagine.
Yeah. So they put the bones in boxes, like wooden boxes, and they would put four sets in each box. And in that box, with each set of bones, was a gold coin. And a supply of rice and some chopsticks. Their culture was that they needed this kind of things to go with them. Otherwise, if they didn't get back to China, they would be wandering around and not.
Oh, the spirits would move. Yeah, okay.
And not ever have peace. So they wanted to make sure that they got back to China for a proper burial in China. And so they needed provisions for the trip.
Fascinating stuff.
I thought, wow.
You didn't think that was going to be interesting.
No,
this is very interesting.
Well, and then you have to dig a little deeper.
Well, of course.
Is Tong and all, that kind of stuff. So I got one last one. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. This is a father and a son thief gang. And they were a gang for only a couple months. but I think they had been in other businesses than what they were stealing for a while. But it was the father, two of his sons, the son-in-law, the son-in-law's brother, and another unknown young man.
So quite the gang.
Yeah, really. And the king of the gang was the youngest, was the son who was 23. And they had been a gang for 2 months. They were stealing wheat. Yeah, they would go to grains or farms and steal wheat grain from their elevators. And then they would go to another town and sell it, make money right away selling that grain. Sometimes they took a little bit more than grain. I think they stole a car and a truck and some of those kinds of other things that they needed. But they also got caught because of dealing with moonshine.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that started their their road to to crime.
They got greedy. They went beyond wheat.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But it started with the moonshine, and then they went into, you know, I mean, we're not talking just a small amount, you know, like 22 bushels. I mean, you know, and even more at some of the others. But that's kind of a lot.
That is a lot when you think about it, yeah.
And then they would get the money, and then one of them got caught in a grocery store in Fairmont because he took the money that he had gotten from the sale of the wheat and was buying groceries, and he got caught pretty much right away. And they all confessed, and the oldest of the sons, that he was 23, but he ended up in prison in Bismarck for about 3 years.
Wheat scammers.
Yep. The father of the group said that he was forced to steal by poverty. So he just got a very short sentence in the county jail.
Kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a little crime. There'll be a little more crime next week.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You literally go into that library like a coal miner, don't you? Just start chiseling away and seeing what you can find.
Well, you find a nugget and then you build on that a little bit. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And how many times that happened to you? You'll go and you'll find one little thing and you go, I don't think this will be very interesting. Then you start digging and you get all of this. I love it.
Pretty much every time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you don't know anything about the history 100 years ago. So everything you read is like, whoa, for the first time, you know? And so it catches your interest.
Jana Gageland, again, what a great story time segment and talking history. What do you got for us next week?
Well, now that we got through January, then we'll look into February.
All right, sounds good.
And we'll see what front page news comes our way.
You'll find something.
Oh, yeah.
Total faith in you.
Thank you.
Jana Gageland talking history here, as we do every Thursday here at the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450, KBMW. Good morning.
Make a lasting impact on your community with a West Central Initiative grant. Grants will range from $3,000 to $25,000 and support nonprofits, schools, and units of government advancing environmental sustainability, social change, and civic engagement across the 9 counties of West Central Minnesota and White Earth Nation. Learn more and apply by February 26th at WCIF.org. West Central Initiative, investing in community-led solutions.
Choose Casey Formanek with